Hi, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever, and whenever anybody's watching this. So thanks for joining us. Today I am talking to Chris and Amber, who are the founders of Last House Ales in Austin. It's an interesting story, I think, because as we all know, brewing has somehow or other become a very male-oriented sort of business. And as the name suggests, Last House Ales is very much all-female brewery. And in fact, it's Austin's only one, I think. So thank you, Chris and Amber, for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I don't know where to start because you have what seems like an interesting story anyway, from what I've read and what we've discussed. So I suppose that the first thing before we get into Last House itself and the name and, you know, what you're doing with it, how did you get together and decide to open a brewery at all, regardless of, you know, any other, regardless of any other intentions behind it?
Yeah. Chris, do you want to?
Sure. Yeah. And apologies about my voice too. It's funny. Last time we did a podcast, I had the same issue. I don't always talk like this, I promise. So, So both of us are from Austin, and we actually met at work, and met on some like conditions of, you know, we were bonding over a breakup, and like our first hangout was, you know, at a brewery, and kind of went from there. You know, I brewed beer in the past, wasn't an expert at all on it, and Amber was brewing kombucha, and I'd also brewed as well, and it's just something that, like, I found myself spending weekends at Amber's house. We had a small little kit at the time that we first started brewing on, and I would just pack up my stuff, bring my dog, and spend weekends there and brewing beer and just kind of learning the process. And at first it was, you know, a fun thing for us to do, and it just evolved into, you know, there's more background to it, what kind of inspired like the brewery. And I know Amber has more to speak on that part, because she kind of spearheaded that part as well, kind of came along for the ride, you know, at first. And so, but yeah, Amber, if you wanted to speak on kind of like what your passion was behind it.
Sure. Yeah. So, and the time period that she's talking about is about, I don't know, 10 years ago. So we met 10 years ago. And at that time, I was developing this, I guess I call it maybe like a summit plan for my life. And I eventually want to have an organization one day that builds infrastructure for communities that don't have resources. And so aside from this, you know, like she said, we met at work, which is an engineering firm. So that's what I do outside of brewing. And so I want to focus with that organization years from now. I want to focus on the engineering. I don't want to have to focus on the fundraising aspect of it. So I thought, well, if I have a business, successful business, then it could help start putting funds into this organization. And so at that time, I, like she said, I was brewing kombucha and was out drinking a lot of beer. My palate was opening up. I was having this great appreciation for what beer can be. It's such an amazing community here in Austin too. Really got ingrained with a lot of the breweries and some of the brewers and, you know, people who are hanging around these places. It's a community. So anyways, I wondered, you know, well, why are these brewers doing this? And so I started looking into the business side of it and realized that, you know, my current passion and my future passion can kind of align at this point. And maybe brewing would be, you know, a fun business to help support that future goal of the organization. So that's what sparked the interest into opening a brewery. And, you know, me and Chris were brewing at that time. And I asked her, hey, I have this idea. It's kind of crazy. Do you want to be a part of it? And she was like, yeah. So I told her the goals, you know, of course, helping, like, you know, putting it back into the community. She's all about that. She also loves animals too. So whatever we can do to give, you know, and group as well for animals, then we'll do that as well. So big-hearted person over there was my perfect brew partner to bring in and try to tackle this big plan one day.
Yeah, it's sorry, there was a bit of static there. It's the first person I think I've talked to where you had an actual big mission behind it. I mean, I've met lots of people who are, you know, doing home brewing and it just kind of grows into that. There's a little bit of feedback there, I think. And it kind of grows into that. But starting out with, you know, you're trying to find a way to get funds is probably unique to anyone I've spoken to. But it also, most brewers I've spoken to are not making an awful lot of money, to be honest with you. So I'm wondering, how did that work out? You know, how do you see it? I suppose, how do you see it making all this money to fund a big mission?
Yeah, so our business model has a couple revenue streams in it, so it won't just be beer. So we're hoping to, when we build our final tap room, we'll have some other amenities, and it's a bigger, much more expanded concept than a tap room. So we'll need to be creative on covering some of our bills into the equipment that we're using or we'd like to use and incorporate much more efficient. We're getting more productivity out of it. So, you know, she has a background, her background's in financials and, you know, making sure projects stay within budget. So she's really keen on maximizing financial sides, and of course with engineering, the same. So, we are very well aware of, what you've said, which is, breweries don't make money, but if you look at some of them, they make a lot of money. So we're hoping that our goal, really the behind it with the organization, that's really going to channel our energy and efforts, and hopefully people and the universe will respond to that and reinforce that we're on the right path here.
Yeah, because
other revenue streams too, like, you know, obviously we want to build a great product and we feel very confident in our product. We're also building an experience for people that want to come, you know, the way that we're building that business concept. So that experience that people are going to be having when they come is like really important to us too. Because we want them to come back. Like, we want that feeling like this is the place I want to bring my friends and family and stuff.
So it's the, like, the community side of this. You're going to try and use, obviously, generate money, some portion of which will go to this community foundation. You're also, sounds like you want to be a hub of the community. So is the money going to go into local community, or do you have it, is that a wider thing, or is it all in the local community?
There's going to be a mixture. Yeah. So my first community outreach was in South America. So I do have a big heart for communities outside of the States as well, but that there's plenty of opportunity here locally, which we've already done with what we can do. We already are being active in some of the community events here, donating our beer that we do have, and helping to provide back into the local community already.
I guess I'm just thinking, like what you said, some breweries, and only a very few, make a fortune, but most of the rest. And it seems that there is, I mean, I presume it's the same in the States as it is over here, that, you know, the cost of living, the cost of everything, the breweries are closing. So, but the ones that it seems to be separating out in is your big breweries and then local community breweries that are, you know, they're part of the community, so people support them. And that sounds like a path you're going down and that you have in your plan.
To be more of like a local, yeah. I guess what I'm thinking you're saying is kind of within the city, like a small tap room, kind of local community hangout. Is that what you kind of
did? Yeah, well, maybe not. I don't know how small, because I'm not thinking like, you know, a one street brewery or anything, but, you know, somewhere like within Austin. I mean, what's the population?
Oh my gosh, I don't know at this point. Are we close to a million, maybe? I have no idea.
Well, let's just say you'll be an Austin brewery, and that's what you're kind of looking to expand
and export worldwide or anything like that. You're an Austin brewery that would be well known in the city, and that's what you want to be. We're kind of a destination for people within Austin, tourists to Austin.
Within Austin and people coming to Austin, there's a lot of events and festivals that are held in Austin. And so we're hoping to have some amenities there that will also attract tourists coming into Austin for these events.
So we
do want it to be as close to Austin as possible, balancing some of the other goals that we have for the experience that we're looking to offer. So we want to be as close to Austin as possible. You know, with the way real estate is right now, that's incredibly difficult. So we've got what we're working with, and we're hoping with the expansion of Austin too, it's eventually going to envelop the location that we land on. So we'll be surrounded by local people, residents, and then also hopefully in a location that's going to attract the tourists and provide amenities for them.
And so I get the other thing is then how has it worked out? You know, you're advertising yourself the only all female brewery, making a big difference in people approaching it. Is it working harder, easier? How's that been working out just on that focus?
I missed part of that question. I'm so, because I do hear that feedback too.
Yeah, feedback there somewhere.
He said, how is being all female? What's the reception on being all female?
I feel like we've had a great response. You know, like it's such a male dominated industry that when they hear about it, I think it just piques people's interest because it's like, obviously they want to come and see what we're all about. And I think when they do try our product, they're pretty shocked. Not to be biased, but I think we make some badass beer. I mean, we put hard work though. Like we really do. When her and I are like collaborating about our recipe, you know, like we're actually, you know, we're doing like our pop rubs and stuff like that. And it's like, what do we like in a beer? But then I feel like we try to expand that too. And like what other people are looking for. Like, we don't want to leave anyone out. Like, I love IPAs, but, you know, and then Amber's kind of helped me, you know, expand my palate on Belgians. And, you know, our flagship is our double Saison, Belgian Saison. And, but like, we put a lot of thought into our work. We want to make sure the quality's there and that we do put out a good product and that we're confident about it when we do. And I think people get surprised when they do try our beer, you know.
Yeah, maybe we'll come back and discuss the beers in a minute. But I'm just thinking of one thing on the all female thing. You're obviously, you know, it's a part of what your kind of what your persona for the brewery, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And it is very much front and center. I mean, I saw your slogan, what is it? A brothel of beers. And so
people do. They really do like it. You know, especially mentioning the local community again, our beer is on tap at a lot of the locally owned establishments. And so there's that personal aspect, which the female aspect really helps to dial that or drill that in even more, because we're from Austin as well. But you'll also have local female owned places that I can think of a couple. Right now, and the name of that bar is female oriented too. So when we walk into a place like that, they dig it so much. They're really excited just to be able to put a beer on that helps support their program already and support the message, you know, that they have in their names. And so there's that side where, you know, females supporting females. And then the guys, when we walk into places, the guys dig it too. They just think it's the coolest thing. I've never really heard anything against, I mean, there's been one person, you know, one person, I think, in this entire experience that, you know, kind of put a dig at us. But other than that, it is an element, and we're not going for, extremes on either side. We're not trying to put out a feminist message, and we're not hypersexualizing anything either. We're just having fun with it. And so everybody has fun with it too. We have some names that are conversation starters. And so, you know, people who are drinking the beer too, they end up creating their own, creating a story that makes sense to them around the names of the beers that we have. And it's just really, really fun. So you've got the restaurants who, you know, really, they want to bring us in because they like the edge of it that they haven't seen before. It helps support what they're, you know, a message they already have, if they have one, in terms of, you know, being female oriented. And then, you know, when people drink it, they're just having a ball of a time laughing and giggling at some of the imagery and the words that we put on it that are all geared to have just, you know, a lot of fun with the female aspect.
And does it make it feel like you've got to prove anything extra? Because I did read that article and it was about how you seem to feel like you have to do every stage of it so that you can say it was female done, rather than, you know, you don't have a big team and you're kind of almost determined to do it all every stage yourself, and maybe you don't need to. So is that important?
Well, it's us two right now. We've had to do it all ourselves because, you know, over the last 10 years, you know, we've been building the brand and the recipes. And, you know, 10 years ago, I did try to pitch it to the concept to other people to try to bring in partners. And at that time, the concept of the brewery, which is like every brewery now, it just didn't get a lot of, you know, they didn't believe that that was going to be the future of the beer, you know, garden concept. So that left us to believe in our brand and to believe in what we could do. So that's why it's been us two over the past 10 years. And then currently it's still us two because of the nature of just where we are in growing. Hiring employees right now is something that's within our capability, because it's still us two at this point. We're building this with our own resources. So it's not that we want to do everything ourselves. We would love to bring on a team at this point. We are still working full time to help get the brewery kicked off. And so we're doing what we can versus, you know, trying to do everything. But it's been, you know, really important that, you know, we do most of the work at this point. We're still learning a lot. So there's definitely a benefit to that. But we want to be in control of the recipes. We, you know, this is, you know, all the flavors that have come out have been created from me and her, and it's done really well. So we're still very much enthralled in the process, and we're not ready to let that go yet, for sure.
And where are you brewing? Do you have your own brewery at the moment, or are you doing it under kind of a gypsy brewing? Or
you want to explain, Chris?
Yeah, currently right now we're doing contract brewing, so we brew on other people's equipment.
Okay.
Our production is not necessary. We have a pilot area. We call it our dive garden, where that's where we pilot a lot of our newer recipes before we take them into production. That's kind of where I think a lot of people know us too. If you're on our website, you'll see like pictures of our dive garden where we've held events. That's where our brand, where we built our brand, you know, and the like environment and the experience that we want to put into, you know, once we have our tap room and like our brick and mortar area.
And where are you in terms of getting the tap room up and running? Is it a bit away yet, or is it closer than that?
Yeah, I would say it's a bit away. So once we identify a property, it will be, you know, we'll have to do construction. The type of property that we're looking for, if it's, you know, raw land, just the nature of permitting where we're at in the city of Austin, we won't even be able to touch it for 8 months.
Okay.
So we'll buy the property, 8 months goes by, then we can start construction. And we are, you know, considering phase construction where we can start brewing sooner than, let's say, the tap room's ready to open. So we can at least have our own place. Because like she said, our current model is renting other people's equipment, which comes with a set of challenges, and we're definitely ready to have our own tap room So that's the ultimate goal. That was the original goal, was to have our own tap room. But what was happening is as we go around, we hang out in our neighborhood spots. And we were telling the managers, we're going to have a brewery one day, you know, and they said, well, just bring us the beer. We'll put it on draft. So, okay, well, we don't have a tap room yet. So let's figure out how we can get beer now that's, you know, certified to sell to retail. And that's when we entered into the agreement that we have now, which is being able to, you know, borrow other people's equipment. And so we've been kind of managing that model, that current model of the distribution while we try to continue to pursue our own tap room.
And does that mean you're limited in the number of days you can brew, or like how flexible is the arrangement?
There's a lot of limitations. And so we've done our best to work within that. And yeah, whenever you're trying to work in the schedule of another production facility, you know, you have to kind of abide by what they're comfortable with. And so when we work full time, we'd like to be brewing on the weekends, but, you know, they're not open on weekends. So we have to fit some things into their schedule. So
sounds like, I don't know where you're finding the time to actually do anything else, like talk to me. I mean, it sounds like So you're distributing then in local bars and restaurants. You do have a distribution set up, and you're like you said, you've built a brand. You're well or reasonably well known in Austin. I don't know how well known, but you are reasonably well known, and people are looking for the beers.
Yeah, we self distribute right now, so it's us also taking the beers around. So yeah, very very much local area.
Right.
But it is cool. Yeah, we'll have people reaching out from out of state, even someone out of the country at one point was just like, hey, we're around the corner. Can we stop by the Dive Garden and come check out your beers or check out the place? And, you know, there's been several times where it's like perfect timing. Like we're around and we'll go get the Dive Garden set up and, you know, have them come over. So it has been really cool. Like even though most of our beers we serve locally, it's been reaching out to other people, like not in the local area.
the local distribution, sorry, is it all kind of on like to bars, or do you have cans and bottles and that as well to shops, or is it a one distribution channel? Or
yeah, currently we're just in kegs right now, though we are definitely, like, in the future we'll be canning for sure.
Okay. I mean, it sounds, yeah, like, I mean, it's like I said, there's more breweries closing now probably than opening, so just keeping going is a huge thing, especially when you're trying to self-fund it. So the beers, I mean, you mentioned there Belgians being a big influence.
Yeah, Belgian's my favorite style. I've been drinking those for a long time. So you know, we're not necessarily like a Belgian brewery. We brew a little something for everyone. Like Chris said, her favorites are IPAs, but we've had several other styles too. But in terms of Belgians, that's the influences from that is coming from me. And so I work really hard to try to, or we work really hard to try to dial in some of those styles. And, you know, Belgians aren't exactly, you know, they have a character of their own to tap into and refine, and adding spices and different kinds of yeast, just to me, it really, it's just a lot of fun to drink those styles of beer. So so those are my favorite, and that's why you'll see a couple Belgians. We, you know, our one of our favorite styles is our double Belgian Saison. And so people like to, compare it to like a pint with some extra flavor. It's like a double, you know, so it's got really nice flavors like the pint has, and you just kind of amplify all that and you'll have something, you know, a last house double saison.
Right.
So yeah, we've been really fortunate. Even our Belgian beer bar here in Austin that, you know, focuses on Belgian only styles, they're willing to put that one on draft. So that was a huge accomplishment ever since I can remember going there. It was always, you know, I'd start daydreaming about seeing our beer on the wall and like what, you know, what a milestone that would be for us. And so that did finally happen last year. And that was really great encouragement, so to say, to keep going.
Yeah. And our Belgians, because I get the impression, again, like probably most of the world, IPAs kind of took over everything for a long time. So is a Belgian scene kind of coming back in there, or is Austin a much more mixed scene now, or is it still very IPA?
I would say people really dig IPAs, a lot of the juicy IPAs. But in terms of is Belgians coming back, it's not like a resurgence, but people are finding their appreciation for it again. I do know up in New England area, like a Belgian, longstanding Belgian brewery shut down. So, but there are articles that I'm seeing about, you know, Belgian being something that can, that, you know, people are going to start appreciating again. So yeah, it's kind of on its way.
When we bring, like, you know, our sample, like our beer, our main piece, you know, one of the comments that we usually get is like, we don't have something like this on our wall. Like, we would love to have something like this on our wall. It's different. You know, they're like, we don't have many saisons to choose from, or like a Belgian. And so it's awesome to be able to fill that void here.
Yeah. Because I think I've mentioned this somewhere else to someone, but my brother, when I was talking to him about beer, and he was just like, nope, won't go near craft beer. I went into a bar, and all they said was like, we have 36 taps, and they're all very hops. And he said, and I don't want hops. I don't want it. And, but that was all that was available. So that's his association of kind of craft beer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just different hops, you know, and which, you know, he's not wrong to some extent, you know, or at least wasn't for a long time. But I think, yeah, I think that there's more variety coming through now, like you said, in Belgians, kind of spontaneous beers and all, you know, saisons, all of those. There seems to be a lot more variety, and a lot of German styles coming back into fashion as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely following kind of fashion trends.
Yeah, and we're hoping to bring back another style of IPAs. You know, a lot of the juicy East Coast IPAs are, you know, really popular. They're very approachable, so to say. And recently we've kind of gone back to the West Coast, you know, the cozy pine tree. I mean, not overpowering, but that feel of a West Coast IPA with a little bit more hops in it, a little less fruity, more like dark fruit. So we brewed one of those late last year. It got really great reception. We did it specifically for a festival called East West Beer Fest, and each brewery brought one East Coast, one West Coast, and then there was a vote as well. So our West Coast was voted the number one West Coast, which also made it number one overall at the festival too.
Okay.
So we're hoping to maybe kind of establish, you know, that flavor profile at least locally, to, you know, bring back the other side of IPAs.
And when you're brewing, do you like, is it very much influenced by what you think someone will sell, or is it very much like what you want to drink?
I feel like we're very like, we try to be aware of what people want to drink, and, you know, also looking at the trends, you know, because obviously we have a juicy IPA we've brewed that was, you know, very much well enjoyed, and we got really good feedback and reception from it. So I think, yeah, we do. Obviously it's like, I love IPAs, and it's funny because like, I want to get punched in the face by hops, like punch my throat. Like, yeah. And so she has to dial me back sometimes, you know, on the IBUs, because it's like, let's make it high. And she's like, let's not. But, you know, so we do, like, we look at what people are drinking, and especially, we also want to drink it too. So, I mean, there's, you know, certain beers that, or, you know, ales that our pub ale, like, I think is also amazing, that something that, you know, we like, and we've noticed that it had really good reception too whenever we had served it. So I think we try to listen to hear what other people want. I mean, it seems like though when we do brew something different like that and people hear it, they want to try it because obviously see the same stuff around town, you know, like the IPAs and whatnot. But it was cool to be part of that festival, to be able to, there's a big presence of IPAs here. There's a festival, but then bring in something that's kind of different than what the IPAs are here, that we do have here. Mm-hmm.
And is that what you think the brand will be? Is a lot of kind of, well, I guess rather than that, I'll ask, what kind of beers do you think the brand will be associated with? Like, is there a style that you want? People will think of Glass House Ales, and there'll be a specific style that'll jump to mind, or is it just like quirky beers? Or
I would call it personality.
Okay.
So personality ales, maybe, if I had to come up with something right now. But, you know, and it kind of fits. You know, we were at one of our bars one day and sampling some beers with the owner there. And it was it might have been a super light beer. And I told him, you know, it's a light beer, but, you know, we can't do anything normal. You know, it has some twists on it. And he tasted it and he said, oh, yeah, I can taste y'all's personality on this. I can taste the Last House on this. And so, you know, I drink the beer around here. And when I do create a beer, I want to create something I haven't had before. So whether I build it off of a traditional style and then we add the spices or, you know, we change the yeast up or we change the grain bill, we're going for something that, you know, me and her are personally seeking to be able to experience in the beer, then it gets great reception and that's something that we end up putting out. So it has a cycle of how do we dial in on what styles we're putting out. And then also we pay attention to seasons as much as we can too. So that'll have an impact on what we put out. But overall, you know, it's ales. We brew ales. People, if someone says, I want a really great Belgian, hopefully they'll think of Last House Ales. If they say, I want a really great IPA that punches you in the face, hopefully they'll think of Last House Ales. Or if they're like, you know, I want something different today. You know, I want something that's going to surprise me, then they'll think of Last House Ales. So,
yeah, I think that's an understated or underappreciated thing of a lot of breweries, because they are, especially like you mentioned with hops, like there are so many breweries producing the exact same thing practically. You know, you just could not differentiate. You go in, you buy it, and it could be, you wouldn't know what brewery it's from, whereas you sound like you know and you have something that you want to be identified. People will identify that this comes from you and not from anyone else.
Hopefully, yeah, that'd be great.
So just talking about the Belgians for a while, I think I came across, like, the Belgians are obviously very yeast. You know, the yeast plays maybe a bigger part of that than in IPA. Mm-hmm. So is that something you have trouble managing? Is there any issue, or do you just experiment with different yeasts, or how do you play with the yeasts in your beers?
We have some of our favorites that we use and gotten really familiar with those yeast. And I mean, some of them, one of the core yeast, it's temperamental and you know, it stalls out during fermentation and we have to kick it back into gear. It takes a little bit longer. Some of them are not so you know, hard to deal with either. You throw it in there and it's the same process. But it does add, it is a big part of the flavor profile and texture too.
Yeah.
And so knowing what those flavor profiles are, it's a huge consideration on which beer we use them in. And then also if we're going to add any other spices to it, that they, you know, agree with each other. But that's the beauty of having Chris join me on the creation of these beers, is that we get together and we put our palates and our senses together and we're able to, you know, build off of it. So
And have your palates or your tastes, have they changed over the 10 years since you set up, or
Main Piece is still like one of my favorite beers. I can't help it. So that one was created in 2018. So over the last 6 years, it's still like just as tasty as ever. But no, in terms of Belgians, there's in the last 10 years, they're still my favorite. I'm always, always looking for that on a menu. It has not changed, not for me, not one bit. So I don't know about Chris and her IPAs, but still, yeah, my palate's still the same. I'm trying to open up to like lagers, you know, going from like loving Belgians to like lager, I think. And so that is one of the harder styles for me to brew. A lager, because I just don't drink them all the time. So if I want to try to dial in that flavor profile, I'm not as familiar with it. So I'm still working on opening my palate to lagers so I can be a better brewer at them.
And you, Chris, has it always been IPAs or?
So, well, and like growing up in a family like Texas, my family are big, what do you say? They drink like the really light beers, just like, you know, like the Bud Lights and the Miller Lights. And so growing up being around that, when Amber and I started hanging out, well, I was drinking IPAs before that, but it was a, you know, Amber helped expand my palate to like Belgians and whatnot. But I've always liked the heavier beers. And so even when we're brewing, sometimes it's hard to kind of try to dial it back into like a lighter beer, like our cream now. But I think we did a damn good job on the cream ale. But I just remember probably the first IPA that I fell in love with that made me love IPAs, and this is probably why I like to get punched in the face by hops, is the 512 double IPA. Like anywhere I could find a double IPA from them, it was just like, that's what I was ordering. But then I had like my favorite IPA is the Lone Pint Yellow Rose, and it's a smash IPA, a very simple, big IPA, but they just did it beautifully. So I definitely like the variety of what type of beers have grown for me, for sure. Especially outside of that. But it's just funny because even when my family comes to taste our beers, like coming from a family that drinks just like the store-bought light beers, they'll taste it and they're just like, whoa, you know,
they love it.
I like
well, yeah, I mean, there is a difference between those and flavorful very beers. I mean, so.
Very much so. Yeah, so. But I mean, it's been a fun ride though, just being able, I think that's the fun part about craft beer though, is, you know, being able to even, you know, like I got so much more to learn about all the different styles. But that's the fun part about it. Like, I want to learn more about it, and I want to try these other beers that I, you know, we haven't necessarily explored. But that's the fun part.
Yeah. No, I mean, that there is. There's a whole world out there. I mean, the first time I tried a sour, I mean, a lambic, nearly spat it out. But I've come to like them since, you know. So your palate does change, and it gets more it gets more open as you go along.
Yeah, well, my palate changes on brew days for sure, because if I'm there for 8 hours drinking a beer, I can't drink Belgians all day. So I have ventured over to some lagers, you know, on the brew days. My palate does adjust for that.
So by the end of the brew day, you want to do something completely different. Yeah, so where do you think you're going now at this stage? I mean, this came into existence as an idea 10 years ago, and obviously you've been, like I said, there's been ups and downs, and you're still coming through what is probably a very difficult time to get a brewery going and running, but you have a distribution, you have customers who look for your beers and that. So how long... where do you think you're going next? Is you just going to expand that distribution out for a while and then get a property, or is it still just when the right property comes along, you're ready to jump on it? Or
so we're looking for a property. we want to have our own space as soon as possible. And then in terms of, are we going to continue to distribute? We've hit some hurdles, we've had a recent, very large setback. And so what we're doing is we're really trying to assess, where we go with the distribution side while we look for our tap room. So there's, you know, a lot of benefits to being able to brew on someone else's equipment, but there's also a heavy set of challenges that come with that. So, you know, we're on a threshold that if we do continue our distribution, we'll also increase our production on that as well. So we'll have some big goals on that end. If we continue the distribution, we'll, you know, like to increase production, and spread our footprint some, even canning. So being more into the retail stores, grocery stores as well. But, you know, again, the goal is a tap room. So while distribution can be, you know, a great way to kind of fill up our time, all the extra time we have. In the meantime, we want to have focus on the tap room. And it's not like when a property comes up, you know, it's definitely actively looking and planning and trying to figure out what fits our needs.
Right. Okay. So, well, I mean, I hope that works out soon. Is there anything, so just coming back to the all female kind of branding, that is there anything that anybody, any other maybe all female group or, you know, partners, or maybe even just a single female trying to set up their own brewery, is there anything that in just being female you would kind of advise them for or against?
I would say be yourself.
Yeah.
Be yourself. Don't worry about the female thing. I mean, I do want to be thoughtful, though, that in other geographical areas, maybe that's different, what they might experience there. But ultimately, I think just being yourself, and it's a dream that you have, then go for it, you know?
Yeah, because like you said, in other areas, like, because there have been an awful lot of stories about, you know, sexism and misogyny and all of that. And I think when it first started, the whole craft beer scene started coming out over here, it was very much out of the UK, and some of the cans, the whole thing, it was very sexist, and it was really off-putting for a lot of people. But at the same time, I've never spoken to anyone in the time I've been talking to you who comes across anything like that. So I'm always wondering where the stories, how realistic or, you know, how widespread it was and how that sort of thing. But it sounds like in Austin, at least, there isn't any resistance. I mean, you are who you are, and that's, if you're interested in beer, you're interested in beer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I think to some of the men in the industry, I mean, they have daughters that come to their breweries. So when they meet us, they think about their own relationships with females in their lives, and that's their daughters. Yeah. And so they really dig the idea. You know, it's definitely a path too, that, as you navigate the industry, wherever you're located, you know, there are going to be challenges. You know, there's other challenges that we have from being female, and, you know, obviously physical strength is one of them.
Yeah, we're working on carrying a half barrel keg ourselves.
yeah, purchase your equipment and things that you can manage. Frankenstein, that's her dog. Frankenstein, yeah, we can hear it. You know, always be cognizant too that, you know, we can do anything we want to do with the right tools. Whether that be actually physical equipment or yourself, your brand, who you are to the community, and how you present yourself. Don't get down on the fact that you're a female. How can you use it to your advantage? And if you have to move, you know, because, you know, look at different areas in your where you're located, where there is better reception. Ignore the people that don't like you if you can. You know, I know, like, we're capable of doing that here. So I don't want to sound insensitive. There may really be areas that people can't just ignore it. But yeah, be yourself.
One of the first things I remember when we were first getting started, we did a homebrew contest, and there was a person there, and she was also a fellow female. But she was, you know, people were asking just about like our goals and everything, and about, you know, our future like idea for the brewery. And there was, you know, she was one of the most, like, one that was kind of like the adversary there and telling us why we wouldn't be able to make it. Like, it's such a saturated, you know, industry, and this is why you're not going to make it. And it's like her and I just kind of like let it roll off her shoulders and kind of, you know, we talk about that moment, not like often, but I just remember that, and we kind of just used it as fuel to the fire, you know, like, and it doesn't just come from, you know, Nels, like it comes from everyone. And so, but yeah, just kind of like letting it kind of, you know, roll up your shoulder, because it can get to you. It gets to everyone if there's negative comments. And you know what? And it's going to come, whatever, if you're in the beer industry, in the engineering industry, there's always going to be, you know, like negative comments or something that's always going to hurdles or challenges that get in your way and stuff like that. But I think just keep going. If you believe in it, you don't let, you know, the negativity get to you.
Well, that sounds like I'm pretty good, pretty upbeat thing to finish on, I think. Pretty good note. So like, if someone's coming to Austin, and I know a lot of people do, like, visit, so we won't list out everywhere they can find your beers, but they can check out your website and they can find the list there, I presume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we try to keep our website updated on where we're at, where we're located. Recently we did have a pretty big setback, so those locations is going to start to dwindle as we can't supply them for a little while. Through our website, there's a phone number and an email there. They can reach out to us and ask if our dive garden is open. And so that's a private space that we do invite people over to just check out our vibe and last house ales and some samples.
Okay, so people, that's you get to drink it privately. You get an exclusive meeting and a place to drink. I mean, what could be better? And like I said, it sounds like a pretty like I said, personality driven beer. So I mean, that's something that you're not going to get, you know, beers you're not going to get exactly anywhere else. It's not just another IPA with the same Citra hops that you're getting everywhere else. So so hopefully people will check you out and will visit. So thanks a million for the time. Is there anything I should have asked, by the way? I forgot anything I didn't ask that you wanted to mention.
I don't know.
Nothing I can think of at the moment. Let us know when you're in Austin.
I'll do that. I think it'll be a while before I get there, but I'll definitely check you out and come and visit. All right, listen, thanks a million for your time. I know it's lunchtime over there, so, and like you said, you have full jobs as well as the brewery, so I better let you get back.
Thank you.
Thanks a million for the chat. Thanks. We'll see you hopefully sometime soon again. Maybe when you have your big news and big distribution, you might give me a shout out when the tap room's open.
Thank you.
Yeah,
all
thank
right.
you so much. We appreciate it.
Bye, Brian.
Bye. Bye.